You're listening to Birth Babies
and Busy Moms.
I'm Kia.
And I'm Dana.
We're two busy, sleep-deprived moms discussing different stages of motherhood,
providing personal experiences and guest speakers to empower and educate mothers around the world,
helping and supporting them to make informed decisions and to let you know
you're not alone. I know.
Welcome back, everybody, to episode 5. We have a pelvic floor therapist, Lisa Flanders, with us today.
Yeah, so we're really excited about having her on our podcast, especially because I personally believe that pelvic floor therapy is so important for new moms.
Did you go your first pregnancy and your second pregnancy?
I did go with my first, and as you guys recall, I had a lot of issues with the forceps. The main issues were in my sphincter, and unfortunately, pelvic floor therapy is not necessarily going to assist with nerve damage. However, I went, got assessed, and I had difference in my muscles on the right side and left side of my pelvic floor due to, I do believe, the episiotomy. So I was given exercises to work on things, and it was great. And then when I got pregnant with my second daughter, I just thought, I'll get an assessment, see where we're at here, and then when I give birth again, I'll go again and see if there's additional issues. I was very lucky because when I got assessed again after I gave birth my second time, there wasn't more issues. It was just the previous issues I had. What about for you?
So I was supposed to go to one after I had my son just because I had the UTIs and I had issues like with urine and stuff in my kidneys and my urethra, but I never ended up going. I don't remember why. I was supposed to go to one through the hospital, actually. And then with my second, I ended up going, I think around 2 or 3 months postpartum, because I was like, there is something wrong, because I had all that those issues. And I went a few times and it did help a lot and it did make me more understanding of what was going on, but I don't know why I didn't really like going.
Well, it's just another task on top of everything else that you're doing. You're taking care of a newborn. You're taking care of yourself postpartum. And there's a lot of issues and difficulties that come with having a newborn and having issues yourself.
I think I would have liked it better if I didn't go through so much trauma, because whenever I would go, like, open wounds mentally, I think.
Yeah, and I think a big piece too is the internal exams that sometimes they do. It could add more trauma. And I do think that, you know, if you do have the trauma, you do have these things, you need to inform them ahead of time so that they're aware of the issues and they're able to make you feel comfortable in the room in order to do those exams. And if you don't want the exam, you don't have to have it.
Yeah, I don't think I did the internal exam the first time. So when I first went, she did like this full exam with me from like when I first got my period to like my sexual health history and just kind of like went through so many things that I was like, why are you asking me these questions? But now it makes sense.
Okay, yeah. And I think that's important that she asked those questions because of the trauma.
Yes, and she also asks, like, how was your pregnancy? And then she also asks you things just like, how has your sexual activity been? Like, are you currently sexually active? She just kind of gets, like, this whole picture opposed to just coming in, what's the issue? And kind of, like, deep dived into everything.
And I think that's what you want out of a provider, is them to go through the whole issue rather just focusing on one thing.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because whenever she would do like an internal exam or whatever, she would like talk about things that like would kind of keep your mind off of what was going on, but also she would be doing things like watching your body of how you're reacting, and she was just totally doing so many more things than just talking to me.
Yeah, no, that's great. So we're really excited to talk to Lisa here today, because I believe that her knowledge is going to be invaluable to our listeners, and especially people going through pregnancy, birth, postpartum, pelvic floor health. I cannot reiterate this enough. It is so important.
Yeah, it should be something that's just universal, part of our healthcare system, and definitely should be through OHIP or just covered.
Yeah, and two, if you think about it, is many women go only after they've given birth. That's when you hear of it. And that's when I had went for the first time, but then went with my second, knowing that there's preventative care as well, because your pelvic floor muscles get so weak after you have a baby and you're carrying a baby and all this weight is bearing down on your pelvic floor. And just knowing that this could also be preventative care as well is just something that women really need to think about. And I really hope their doctors inform them of this.
Yeah, no, very true. So let's get into it.
Well, thank you so much, Lisa, for joining us here today. We're really excited to have you. I know Kia and myself have both been through pelvic floor therapy before, and we're really interested to see what information you have for us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate being here. So my name is Lisa Flanders. I am one of the co-founders of Bloom Integrative Health and Movement Center. We are a female-focused, family-friendly women's and pelvic health clinic. So we do have 13 physiotherapists that all are experts in women's and pelvic health. We treat prenatal, postnatal, and beyond. So really everybody has a pelvic floor. So anybody can come for pelvic floor physio. However, our bread and butter is definitely the pre and postnatal care.
So people who are going through pregnancy, what are some things that you look at or assist with?
So there's quite a few different things that we can assist with, and it really depends on your experience during your pregnancy. I do recommend every single woman come to see a pelvic floor physiotherapist at some point in their pregnancy. If that person is having some concerns like low back pain, pelvis pain, any other pelvic floor concerns like incontinence that start early on, you can really start treatment at any time. And if you aren't having any concerns and you're really just wanting to learn about your body and get ready for birth, I typically then recommend you start at 28 weeks, so third trimester. And I like to recommend 3 appointments. So we usually do like a 28-week appointment, a 32-week appointment, and then a 36-week appointment. If you're coming specifically for birth prep, what those appointments are going to look like is you are going to get to know your pelvic floor. You're going to get to learn about the muscles that you probably never thought of before, especially if it's your first pregnancy. You're going to learn how to engage those muscles, but more importantly, you're going to learn how to relax those muscles. And that's very important for birth. We're also going to be discussing other supportive exercises that will help open up the pelvis and help you have a birth that you feel comfortable with and that you feel in control of. So if someone is coming in for pain-related concerns, that's going to look a little bit differently. So we will do a little bit of manual therapy. We are going to figure out the cause of your concern. So low back pain, pelvis pain in pregnancy can be caused by so many different things. And all appointments are going to include some form of birth prep. So even if you're not specifically coming for birth prep, we will still address birth prep with you so that you can feel confident going into your birth.
Can all of these things be done virtually or do they have to be in person?
Yeah, so there's definitely quite a few options, especially if you're in an area that doesn't have a pelvic floor physiotherapist and you want to see someone. So we see most of our clients in person. There are always situations where that is not possible. That can be based on where you live. We had a big snowstorm yesterday. Obviously, we weren't seeing that many people in person yesterday because it wasn't necessarily safe to be on the road. So we can definitely treat people virtually as well. We became very, very good at virtual physiotherapy during COVID. So we did run 3 full months of just seeing patients virtually. And I did have a number of patients that I only saw virtually during that time because they sort of came at the beginning of when we weren't seeing people in person. And then by the time we were seeing people in person again, they were discharged. So it's really up to what your comfort level is, what your ability is. I especially understand people that have maybe a toddler and a newborn at home. It's not necessarily very easy to get out of the house to be able to come for an appointment. So virtual is absolutely an option and we can do a lot of things virtually. And there's lots of ways you can still really understand your body either pre and or postnatally through a virtual appointment.
That's great. Especially like you mentioned before, you know, new moms, they have a newborn at home. And if you have additional children, it's just so difficult getting out of the house and making those important appointments. I know for myself, when I went through all the issues I went through and having forceps and needing to go to pelvic floor therapy, getting out of the house, it wasn't necessarily something I was looking forward to or even putting effort into in the beginning first few months, which I should have been going in those first few months because of all the issues I was having. So just doing virtual appointments in general, I think that's an amazing thing to do.
Also, I think it's important to note that there's no time where it's too late to see someone. So as much as I said, we'd like to see you at 28 weeks, that might not happen, right? You might not know about pelvic floor physiotherapy at that point. And then you find out about it in your 36 weeks. That's still okay. You can still come. You're going to get a lot of really great information. And then same with the postpartum. The earliest that I would see someone for pelvic floor physiotherapy when we would potentially be doing any sort of internal evaluation would be at the 6-week mark. There are obviously people that come in a little bit sooner than that because of things related to birth that have to do with pain. However, there's also never a time that's too late. So pelvic floor physiotherapy has been around for many years, but really in the last 10 years has gained a lot of traction. I've been practicing for 13 years now. And in the last 10 years, people are becoming more aware, but there was many years where people hadn't seen someone. And so we would see people when they were maybe in perimenopause and they said, oh, I wish I'd come after my baby, but it's not too late. Like, our body is still very adaptable and our body can still learn new things.
So where do you think the switch came in the last 10 years? Like, what made women be more interested in their pelvic health?
I think there was just a lot more education around women's health in general. I mean, we are in an era now where we do have a lot more access to information through social media, through podcasts. So there's definitely just been more of an information share in the last 10 years or so. I personally spent a lot of time educating individuals about what I do, because at the time when I started practicing, it was a newer field. People weren't as aware. And there was also a lot of stigma around talking about our pelvic floor and pee in our pants and things like that. So I made it really my mission to really smash that stigma, really reduce that stigma around women's and pelvic health, and that this is like an okay thing for us to talk about. 50% of the population has the ability to give birth. 50% of the population has a vulva, has a vagina. And so it's okay for us to talk about these things. We don't need to be embarrassed about, I sneezed and I peed. Well, that's okay. Like, a lot that happens to a lot of people. So I really made it my mission when I first started practicing to educate as many people as possible. And I think that there was a few other people in the women's health field that also felt that that was very important. So we saw that really nice shift in the last 10 years or so.
Yeah, and that's amazing. And I think too that a lot of people don't realize how important pelvic health is. Like, when I was, I think, 8 weeks or 9 weeks postpartum, I seen a pelvic floor therapist, and she was even just saying from my like external exam how tight my whole body was.
Yeah, and that's really common. A lot of women come in and say, oh, I feel like I'm really weak. And what's actually happening is their muscles are very tight. So tight muscles just get tired a lot quicker. They're just not as functional as muscles that aren't tight. So especially during birth, our muscles get quite tense because they're holding on to a lot more weight. It's just the nature of what's going to happen to our body. So a lot of women come in and say, I feel like I'm really weak, but really it's that they have to learn how to relax those muscles first so that then they can generate a contraction. So a lot of what we do isn't necessarily just about strengthening. It's about finding exactly what the cause of your concern is and addressing it specifically for you.
And are there any specific exercises or stretches you recommend for individuals to maintain their pelvic floor health?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'd say there's quite a few that I recommend for people right off beginning to start to learn about their body and how it moves and make that brain-body connection. That's very important. So I do have some simple exercises that I start with most people just to start creating that connection again. So we do look at various types of lengthening, stretching the pelvic floor. I like to use small balls like the massage balls, and we sit on them in different positions. Then we can graduate to like different types of like different size balls, kind of depending on how the person progresses. I do like to start people off also with connecting their breath and their pelvic floor. So kind of depending on what that person needs. Some people need kind of full pelvic floor activation. Some people really need to ignore the back, focus on the front. And some people actually just need a little bit more of that deep core connection as well. From there, I think if we practice enough, we can actually start adding in our pelvic floor deep core training into our general life. So I don't specifically sit there and do pelvic floor exercises. I don't specifically sit here and do Kegels. But when I go to the gym and I'm lifting weights, I am very aware and cognizant of my pelvic floor during some of those activities.
Can you talk about the importance of breathing techniques? Because you mentioned it before that you focus on breathing along with the exercises. So what does that kind of look like?
Yeah, I definitely find most people don't breathe properly. And when I say properly, I don't expect that someone is going to breathe one way all day long. We are always going to be in situations where we're going to have to change our breathing. We know when we are in a high impact situation, we're doing a lot of physical activity, our breath is going to be quicker and more shallow. But I like to bring people's attention to different areas of the body that they can breathe. So anybody who's ever done yoga is probably very familiar with what a belly breath is. And there's a lot of people that come in and they will only breathe into their belly. Then we have the people that come in and they're very tense in their abdomen, or maybe they sit a lot at work, or they wear tight clothing like Spanx underneath their work outfit, and that puts a lot of compression on the abdomen. And so we then see those people that we call apical breathers. So they breathe a lot from their shoulders and their upper chest. Ideally, you should be able to breathe all different ways depending on the scenario. So what we focus on a lot with breathing is really thinking about what we call like a 360 breath. So we're breathing into the low belly, the upper belly, into the rib cage. We're expanding the rib cage in all directions. The rib cage really does move in this sort of 360 way. And then finally bringing air into sort of the upper chest area. So I would say most of my clients are not great rib breathers. I call it decreased lateral costal expansion. So an exercise that I might give them might be to open up the side of the ribs in a stretch. I like to do variations of things like cat cow, but we'll do more of a lateral or side movement. Even just, you know, bringing an arm up overhead and stretching out the sides of the ribs is really important. It also plays a really big role in our ability to rotate our body. So if we are lacking that like rib thorax range of motion, we're not going to get as much rotation. And then we start to see things like leaks with running because the thorax isn't moving well. So the pelvic floor is being affected, but it's because of the rib cage. So we do spend a lot of time going through breathing with people and showing them different ways they can breathe. And again, I'm not expecting someone to breathe in this sort of 360 direction for their entire life. That's not feasible, but we are hoping that they at some point in the day can maybe do 5 breaths where they're really focusing on that 360. There's also just been so much great research around long, slow, smooth breaths and things like our sympathetic nervous system. So we can use breathing to help relax our sympathetic nervous system. That's our fight and flight. We can use breathing to help us just feel more calm in a situation. Like we know this. And so if we can teach people how to breathe appropriately in the situations that they need it, it can be really beneficial to physical and mental health.
So when you've gone through birth trauma, let's say, or something really traumatic through pregnancy, do you see more issues postpartum? Like somebody who's had a C-section, for example?
Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's different. Everybody responds to birth different. And we know that people can have two of the exact same scenarios or events happen and that they're going to respond in a completely different way. So someone who has had a more perceived traumatic birth may be coming in with more concerns around pelvic pain, pain with intercourse, because their body is in this big protection mode. So trying to protect them, trying to hold on, trying to support them, which is really lovely for your body to do because it cares about you. But also then we sometimes have to work through the physical part, which is showing the body that's actually safe and these things like stretching are okay. And then I also always recommend talk therapy if someone's had a more traumatic birth experience, because I think that that piece is equally as important as the physical health. Physical is very important, but we have the like mental, emotional, which is equally as important.
And they're all connected. And
they are all connected. Absolutely. We know people that experience more stress in their life experience more chronic pain. This has been researched. Or chronic pain leads to more stress. Like it's like chicken egg. One happens and then it leads to the other.
And so when you're looking at recovery after a childbirth situation, and say, for instance, someone has been through a traumatic birth, what does that kind of look like? Are you treating it in a very unique, different way, or is it very linear?
There are some things in treatment that are going to be linear. So with an initial assessment, we always start with your story. So we want to know kind of everything about your history. So obviously, if you have had a more traumatic birth, that story is going to look a little bit different than if you've had a more simple, straightforward birth. We always try to treat the person, though. And I think what's really important after having any sort of traumatic birth experience or any traumatic experience in your life where you now have to go for treatment is you want to make sure that the person that you're seeing is trauma-informed. So that person understands what you're going through, because modifications can be made to all treatment plans based on where that person's at. Yes, the gold standard for pelvic floor physio is an internal exam. If that is not something that you want to do, we have many ways to address your pelvic floor externally. Most of us are very good at assessing people externally. So yes, I can get a little bit more information when I do an internal exam. And yes, you might get a little bit more of that connection right away. But if you are not ready for that piece to happen, that does not have to happen. You never have to consent to something that you don't want to consent to. The second thing that we have that's a little bit unique at our clinic, we do have access to something called a real-time ultrasound. This is the same technology that they would use to like do a fetal ultrasound or to ultrasound a body part to look at things like muscle tears. We do have one in the clinic. You do have to be referred from your doctor for that. So we do need that your doctor to sign off on it, but it actually gives us an ability to address and assess your pelvic floor muscles externally. So we are not using this to look at a baby in your belly. We're not using this to diagnose muscle injury, but we're using it to be able to address things like tone and pelvic floor function in an external way. And then you can visually see it. So it creates a little bit more of that brain-body connection, which can be very helpful for all types of therapy.
That's amazing. I've never heard of it before. Is it like a newer thing?
So we have had ours since we opened the clinic, which is in 2019. It is definitely a little bit more of a barrier to use in Ontario because we do need that doctor referral. We do have all the referral forms at the clinic. So if it's something that I think is going to be beneficial for someone, I will send the forms to their doctor. We use it a lot with pediatrics. It is used a little bit more in BC, I find, because they don't have that extra barrier. But in Ontario, it's that little extra barrier to be able to use it. But it is super beneficial. And like being able to visualize what's exactly happening in your body is so helpful for people. So that is an option as well. So if you are not wanting to consent to an internal exam, that is another option that we have for you.
And now you were mentioning that it's completely external. Do you have an internal ultrasound as well?
We don't have an internal ultrasound because there's just those other pieces that we would need to be able to clean and whatnot. And that for us is not going to give us any more information than doing an internal exam. So using the ultrasound, we're not assessing specific things like muscle tears or when you go for a pelvic ultrasound, when they're looking to see what your bladder looks like and if there's any growths and whatnot. So we're specifically using this to assess your muscle function. So we are able to do that completely externally through just above your pubic bone. There's a way we can angle the machine so that we can get both a sagittal plane view. So that's sort of like a cross cut in the body, and then also a coronal plane view, which is more like a left-right cut through the body.
So two things. So if you're just doing an external exam, does that limit the exam at all? And for the ultrasound, is there like a additional fee for it? Like, is that covered through OHIP? Is that covered through private benefits?
Those are good questions. So first off, let's address the external exam. So if you are just an external exam, is it going to limit things? I mean, to a very small degree. So don't feel that if you are coming in and you don't want the internal exam, that that's going to change our assessment. It's not. One of the other things I think it's important to find with a pelvic floor physiotherapist is someone that looks at your whole body. So our pelvic floor is a piece of our body and the rest of the body is connected. So we are still going to do like a full comprehensive external exam on every single person that comes in. The hope with starting with an external exam is that eventually the person will be comfortable enough to have an internal evaluation, but that also sometimes doesn't happen. And we still have a lot of success without having to necessarily assess someone internally. And then your second question was about the ultrasound. So the ultrasound is not an additional charge. It is part of your physiotherapy treatment. It is not covered under OHIP. Unfortunately, a lot of private physio is not covered under OHIP. There's very big regulations for what can be covered under OHIP. And typically pelvic floor physiotherapy is not. However, it is part of your physiotherapy treatment. So it just goes under your regular insurance benefit. And it is the same cost as coming in for an appointment with us. And it's not even like your entire appointment. So typically our follow-up appointments are 45 minutes. However, if you are doing ultrasound as part of that, it's still 45 minutes. We just maybe will shift another part of the treatment somewhere else to like a different day or whatever it may be.
So are all the pelvic floor therapists trained to read these ultrasounds, or what does that look like? And in addition, what kind of training do they have to assist individuals going through pregnancy, birth, and postpartum?
That's a really good question. At our clinic, there is a number of us who have done additional training on real-time ultrasound. When we're reading this ultrasound, it is live. So it's a live video that you are seeing of your own body. We're not taking the images. I mean, we can record the images and compare them across sessions, but we're not taking that and then creating a report like you would get with a regular ultrasound report. we are showing you live what is going on with your body. So a number of us have taken additional training, and then we actually in-house train our staff how to use and how to read the ultrasound. And then in terms of what kind of training women's and pelvic floor physiotherapists have, so to become a pelvic floor physiotherapist in Ontario, you have to take a 40-hour training course. It does include an exam, and this allows you to treat very basic things like incontinence. From there, there's multiple other options for training. Starts very basic with incontinence, pelvic organ prolapse, moves into things like pelvic pain in higher levels. There are courses on treating pregnancy and postpartum. There are courses on treating tailbone pain, tailbone dysfunction. So after you take the first course, it's kind of up to the individual of where they want to go with their training. I personally have done like many, many levels of training. I've probably taken well over 15 pelvic floor related courses. And then I'm always taking other courses in women's health. But to be a pelvic floor physiotherapist in Ontario, it's that first 40-hour course is the most important. And then from there, you sort of figure out where you want
to
go.
So to be a pelvic floor therapist, it's completely separate than a physiotherapist.
No. So I should reiterate that. So to be a pelvic floor physiotherapist in Ontario, you have to take this specific training. There are other people that can absolutely like work within women's and pelvic health. We know a lot of personal trainers that are trained in women's and pelvic health. To be able to do an internal exam in Ontario, you have to be a physiotherapist. So other professions, even if they were to do the training, can't necessarily do the internal exam component.
And in what ways are you able to make a comfortable space for individuals to allow the internal exam to happen?
A big thing at our clinic and all clinics is that we have to have informed consent. When we talk about doing the internal exam, I am going to go over exactly what that looks like. We do have models, 3D models, where we can show you where the muscles are, how they connect to the rest of the body, and then talk you through what happens during the internal exam. I'm then going to get that person's consent. We're going to talk about risks and benefits of having an internal exam and alternatives for that day. And then that person can make their informed choice of whether they feel comfortable with that or not today. I would say 98% of my clients are perfectly comfortable with an internal exam. There are definitely a small percentage that are not. And like I said, there's a lot of alternatives. The way that our clinic is set up, and most women's health clinics should be set up, in my opinion, is that we do have private rooms. So this means that you are by yourself in the treatment room. We don't like to use gowns. You know, when you go to for a pap test and they give you like that weird paper gown and you don't know where do you put it on forwards or backwards? Like, how does it work? We use sheets. We use a table topper to protect the table. We always use gloves and we always use lubricant. And we don't use a speculum. It's much more comfortable than a pap test. So I personally just use one finger, so it's more comfortable. And I just go with what that person's comfort level is. I like to make sure that we have eye contact the entire time. So I sit off to the side of the person versus when you go for a pap test and they're at the bottom and you can't see them and they can't see you. So I can then also gauge on that person's face, like, oh, this seems like this might be a little bit painful for you. And I then know when to back off. I touch base with the patient the entire time, especially around pelvic pain. I like to get a pain scale all the way through. So I touch base, where are we at on a scale of 0 to 10? And again, I always remind people that if at any point they want me to stop what I'm doing, you say stop and I will completely back off.
Yeah. So that's actually like pretty good, like especially with the informed consent piece. And I'm sure that it like changes every day, right? But what are the kind of things that could be a risk or a benefit to doing this internal exam?
I think the biggest benefit is it allows the therapist to identify exactly what's happening in each muscle. And I think another big benefit is that then that person can create that connection of, okay, this is the left side of my pelvic floor. This is the right side of my pelvic floor. I love using a mirror, especially for people who've never looked at their vulva. I like to really encourage it. We either do it in session or I have that as part of homework. And then risks are very minimal. One of the bigger risks is that you're going to have some discomfort that lasts typically no longer than 24 hours. I'm sure we all had pap tests, a few of them in our life. And after your pap test, you're like, I just feel a little bit different today. The only other risk involved is around people who are in a more high risk pregnancy. So We don't typically do internal exams on anyone who's been told that they should be on pelvic rest, or if they've been told to refrain from intercourse for any reason. Those would be like hard no's. We wouldn't do an internal exam. There's also an age requirement. We do treat a lot of children and teenagers, and we do not do internal exams on that age group. That's another really good benefit of having the real-time ultrasound so that we can assess that population and give them the feedback that they need.
Yeah, that's great. And then how important would you say it is to focus on pelvic floor health when, say, for instance, someone just gave birth, but they're not experiencing any symptoms?
If they are a current patient of mine and I saw them prenatally, I'm always going to recommend they come up for a postnatal appointment. Because sometimes we might not have any concerns right away, but it's good to get ahead of any concerns that could come up. A lot of people feel pretty good after they give birth, but they're not moving and exercising in the ways that they want to. So sometimes we just do that in that first assessment, kind of see where they're at. We give them a few things to start working on. And then I always say, you know what, if you're feeling good, don't come back to me unless you have an issue. Then I might see them within, like, you know, 6 months to a year once they resume physical activity. And then they go, oh, okay, yes, I've been skipping and now I'm peeing. Or, you know, I was jumping on the trampoline with my three-year-old and, oh, I peed there. So that would be obviously a reason to come back. I just think it's really important for us to have a really good understanding of our body. And so I would recommend, like, everybody, regardless of whether you've had kids or not, at some point in your life, go for a pelvic floor exam and learn about your body.
I'm surprised that so many people don't know about pelvic floor health, because before I was pregnant, I never knew about it. I don't think I ever even heard people talking about it. I mean, mind you, I didn't have as many friends that had kids, but it's not something that's very well known.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's growing and people are becoming much more aware. But unless you're in a situation where you might need a pelvic floor physio, you might not be aware of their existence. So on my end, that's just continuing to educate and share with people all the benefits of women's and pelvic health.
And I think too, what a lot of the focus is on is after an individual gives birth, then it's recommended to go to pelvic floor therapy, whereas they're not looking at preventative care as well, or maintaining your pelvic health previous to the birth. So I feel like that piece is also missing.
Yeah, absolutely. I find a lot of people are like, well, why would I come before the baby comes? And I always describe it as like prehab. Let's learn about your body before a big incident has happened. And let's add a little bit of muscle strength. Let's connect with your body so that after you have the baby, those connections are so much easier to make, right? If you've never, ever looked or thought of your pelvic floor, and then you had this experience of birth, and then you're now trying to connect with your pelvic floor, your brain's gonna be like, I don't know what you want me to do. But if we can get that connection started in advance, I typically see faster outcomes.
So how far in advance are you recommending people come? Like a year before, like before they even try to conceive?
It really depends on the person. I mean, I do have people that come before they've conceived because they're just curious. Again, and I think I mentioned this earlier, that if you're really having no concerns, sort of 28 weeks is a good place to start. So third trimester is a good place to start. And typically like 2 to 3 visits in that time.
Are you seeing them close together, far apart? Like, how does that look?
Yeah, if someone is not really having many concerns, I'll typically do the first appointment at 28 weeks, then 4 weeks later, another appointment 32 weeks, and then a final appointment around 36 weeks. It's about 4 weeks apart for each visit. Postnatal follow-ups, if they are a current client of mine, I will get them to book a 6-week postpartum or 6-week past your due date, a 9-week, and a 12-week. And I do that because sometimes, A, having an appointment booked is always easier than trying to book an appointment when you have a newborn at home. And then if we need to adjust that first appointment, that's great. We still have that 9-week past your due date appointment. And then if you go a little bit late, okay, so it's going to turn into 8 weeks, not 6 weeks, and that's fine.
And in regards to pelvic floor health, and I believe it's called dissectus recti, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, diastasis recti.
How does that connect to your pelvic floor? And do you see this as a common issue for women?
Yeah. So diastasis is a really good topic to talk about. First of all, that your pelvic floor is part of your deep core. So we have our pelvic floors at the bottom. In the front of our abdomen, we have a very deep muscle that runs from side to side. It's called transversus abdominis. we have our diaphragm, which we talked about earlier with breathing. And then we have another muscle in the back. It's called multifidus. So we sort of have this big canister that makes up our deepest layer, our deep core muscles. So therefore, yes, diastasis, that affects your abdomen. That does then play a role in pelvic floor health as well. Now, diastasis, in my opinion, is a really hot topic because if we look at the research, most women, there's somewhere between 85% and 100% of women, depending on what research source you look at, that will have diastasis recti by their third trimester. This is not ab separation. Your abs are not separating. They're not splitting. They're simply the connective tissue that connects the left side and the right side of your abdominal muscles together is stretching. It's stretching because you have a baby growing in your belly. Something has to stretch to allow that baby to grow. Muscles don't stretch as much. So instead, that connective tissue that holds the left and right side will stretch. You know, when someone has like a six pack and they have that line from like their rib cage all the way down to their pubic bone, that tissue is called the linea alba. So that is the connective tissue that holds the left and right side together. And so diastasis is simply when that tissue has to stretch to grow a baby. So again, somewhere between 85 to 100% of women will have a diastasis during their third, by the time they hit their third trimester. Of those, about 50% will spontaneously resolve by about 6 weeks. Okay. So when people come in their third trimester and they go, oh, I think I have a diastasis. I'm like, yeah, you're growing a human being inside your body. That's a pretty big thing that you're doing. So at that 6 week appointment, part of our assessment is to also assess the abdominal wall and the function of the abdominal wall. So if someone has a small diastasis, typically we can actually see really great change that happens with some changes to breathing patterns and core pelvic floor strength, re-strengthening. There are definitely people that have larger diastases. Their muscle or their tissues have stretched a little bit more, that it takes a little bit more work. And then we always have a few people that maybe are more of like a surgical case if they don't like the aesthetics of it, but we can also get a very functional abdominal wall without that surgical intervention. So it's not necessarily about like how wide it is. It's about how functional it is, how functional the muscles still are. And that's why it's really important, I think, to have it properly assessed.
Yeah. So I'm surprised by that because I always thought that it was just like if you have that line, I guess it's like a stigma or stereotype. I don't know what you want to call it, but I wasn't aware that like almost everyone has it. So can you personally tell if you have it or is this something you need to get assessed?
You could absolutely tell if you have it yourself. So, I mean, a simple thing to do is curl up task. You can find them all over the internet. You're basically lying on your back, legs straight. You're going to do a little curl up, head and shoulders up off the ground. And then you're feeling that midline and seeing, okay, how much space is between my left and right abdominals and how deep can I sink? Now, there is always going to be a space there because when we have a six pack, that line is created from that space. So everybody has some sort of space between their left and right abdomen. So if you have a space, it does not mean you have a diastasis. So you can self-assess. However, if you want like a feedback, go to someone who knows what they're looking for because we all have that space and it just depends on things like depth and like width to what severity it is. That makes sense.
Yeah. And so I actually never heard of this until I went to my pelvic floor therapist. And when I went to her and I did a sit up and I said, it's weird because my body, it was kind of creating a dome when I would do a sit up. And I said, something feels wrong. This isn't right. And that's when I got diagnosed with that. And then, so we were working on exercises to fix that. So what are some other symptoms or other things that are noticeable that we can recognize this other than doing a sit up?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's going to be the big one. It's going to be any form of like abdominal engagement. If we see any sort of doming or coning, that could be a sign that you have a diastasis. Again, this is not the end of the world. And it doesn't mean that you should stop that exercise. It just means that exercise might not help fix what you want it to fix or heal what you want it to heal. So I never say like, oh, don't do that exercise because you're having doming, but what I like to say is let's add these other things in to help support that as well. Very rarely we'll see people that have things like low back pain. if they have diastasis. And that's, again, because the diastasis is the tissue separating, but it also means that the muscles don't necessarily have as much tissue to pull on. So everybody's a little bit different, but like sort of our gold rule assessment is we look at a curl up task, so a sit up task, or we look at a single leg lift. Sometimes it's just really a matter of like, this is what your transversus abdominis does. We start to add some transversus abdominis reintegration into your exercise, and then suddenly you can do a curl up with no concern.
That's funny because I'm like trying to feel mine right now. But how deep is a normal thing? Like, where do you get to a point of like, okay, something's wrong if it's not severe?
Yeah. Where do you get to a point where something's wrong? Again, it really depends on the individual. So we have people, I've seen people that have width of four fingers that are very functional in life. They can do all the physical activities they want to do and they have no concerns. I've seen other people that do have concerns and they're maybe like a two finger width apart. So that's width. And then depth is how far you can sink your fingers into the tissue. Now, doing it in seated is not necessarily the way to do it because our muscles are not activated. But if you were to lie down on your back and you do your curl up and your fingers can sink way down deep, then that's a sign that those tissues are not pulling taut enough to give you support.
Maybe I'll do this after the podcast.
You can give it a try and see. And again, sometimes it's a really simple fix. It's just let's turn the deep core back on.
So is this something you only see in pregnancy and postpartum, or is this something that can like happen just from like an injury, for example?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely can happen from an injury. We've seen it in men who, you know, carry more weight in their abdomen. So we definitely see it there. So diastasis really occurs when there is a sustained amount of pressure over a long period of time, which is why when people are like, oh, I noticed this during my sit-up, I shouldn't do sit-ups anymore. I'm like, well, that's not really a long enough period of time to have that sustained pressure. So yeah, we see it in, you know, people who carry like more abdominal fat, more so men because their abdominal fat tends to be deeper and underneath the muscle. All babies are born with diastasis.
Oh, really?
So yeah. So typically that will start to resolve when they start moving because that's when the muscles are pulling on the tissue. Non-contractile tissue can't really get stronger on its own. The way that it gets stronger is by our muscles pulling on it in different directions. So, you know, forward and backwards, side to side. The tissue says, oh, hey, I think you're putting a lot of strain on me. I think I need to lay down more layers of tissue. So that's how that tissue that's been stretched gets a little bit stronger, is by actually using it in a lot of different ways.
Wow, that's interesting. And then, mm-hmm. So in relation again to pelvic floor health and diastasis recti, in regards to that, what are the outcomes looking like for individuals who are going to therapy and for individuals who aren't going to therapy?
Yeah, I mean, again, like I mentioned, about 50% of people with diastasis will spontaneously resolve on their own by 6 weeks. So there's also just a little bit of natural healing time that has to happen. I don't know if we have like specific numbers on outcomes, because I think again, pelvic floor physio hasn't been as popular and people haven't even known what diastasis is for very long, but we've had thousands of years of women giving birth and not having long-term concerns about diastasis. So it's really hard to say what the outcomes are. I really think if you are seeing any doming or coning, go see a physio, get it assessed, learn how to engage your pelvic floor and deep core, and then go back and do the movements that you love to do with those principles in mind.
Yeah, so that's amazing. So can a family doctor diagnose this and stuff? Like, I'm sure they're going to recommend physio anyways, but like, is this something that people go to their doctor and ask about, or is this something that people just instantly go to physio?
Yeah, I think, again, it depends on the doctor. So I think some are going to be, they're going to be informed differently kind of depending on who your doctor is. If your doctor is more focused on the women's and pelvic health side, they might be better able to assess. If they aren't, then they might say, hey, go see a physio and give you a referral. So it's hard to say for sure how many family doctors are going to know. I probably, like, as a healthcare provider, I probably personally would bypass my own doctor and just go for physio. The nice thing about physiotherapy, we are primary care providers. So you don't need a doctor's referral to see us.
So yeah, when I went, the person that I went to was a pelvic floor physio, but she also did osteo. So is that kind of common with you guys? Do you guys see people for all issues, or is it just mainly pelvic floor health?
Yeah, so we're all orthopedic physiotherapists. So orthopedics just meaning like the musculoskeletal system. Pelvic floor physiotherapy is just orthopedic physiotherapy in a cave. Our team typically does address the entire body and looks at how the entire body is related. And then depending on who you see at any clinic, we're all going to have different training. So we all have our specific pelvic floor training course, but then there's hundreds of other courses that you can take. So I personally have done a lot of training in visceral manipulation, which is like our organ system. I've done some myofascial release training. I've done quite a variety of courses. What I've taken is not necessarily going to be what the next person has taken. So the osteopathy part. So osteopathy is its own whole profession. So unless you've done specific osteo training, you can't really call yourself an osteopath. So like for me, I'm a physiotherapist. I do pelvic health and I do visceral work, but I'm definitely not doing what an osteopath does. That's different. There is overlap, obviously, through all healthcare professions about what we do. So all pelvic floor physios are also orthopedic physios first. We all treat the whole body. At least at our clinic, we treat the whole body. And so if you have a shoulder injury, absolutely, you can come in and see us. If you have low back pain, that's very much related to the pelvic floor course, you can come see us. And what I find happens is I see someone for their, you know, pre-postnatal concerns, and then they continue seeing me for other injuries like throughout the rest of their life. Or they send their husband into the clinic because, oh, okay, we've had a good experience here. So yes, we still treat general orthopedics. You can come in for your ankle sprain. You can come in for like shoulder injury. We just all have this extra focus on women's and pelvic health, which for me definitely makes me a better overall therapist because there's just that piece of the puzzle that I have a little bit more knowledge about.
Yeah. And what are the most common concerns you see women coming into your clinic?
Yeah, I would say like definitely number one is incontinence. So any sort of leaking that can be related to things like coughing, sneezing, laughing. So, you know, do you want to be out with your friends laughing and then pee your pants? No, that's going to impact your quality of life. We also see people that have incontinence related to physical activity. So running, jumping, those types of things. There's also incontinence related to something called like urgency and urge incontinence. And that's like a brain pelvic floor connection. If you've ever been in a situation where you're like have to go to the bathroom and then you're trying to go and then you're trying to undo your pants and then you start to leak, that's urge incontinence. And so that's like a whole different type of incontinence. So incontinence obviously is number one. We see a lot of people also after birth coming in for something called pelvic organ prolapse. So that's when your bladder or your rectum or your uterus are just sitting a little bit more into the vagina, right? So there's some weakness in the tissue. The vagina is not supporting those structures as well as it can. So that's common. Obviously diastasis is very common as well. And then all sorts of other things like constipation, lots of constipation in kids we see, constipation in adults as well. It can be things like tailbone pain is a really common one, pain with intercourse, general pelvic girdle pain. There's quite a few different things that you can come see a pelvic floor physio for.
And then in regards to, you mentioned the rectum, do you guys do rectal exams as well?
Yeah. So not on everyone. It depends on whether it's warranted or not. If you do not have a vulva and you are going to have an internal exam, so men and people without vulvas, obviously that's the only way that we can access the pelvic floor. So we do rectal exams in that way. Occasionally when someone's having tailbone pain, tailbone issues, we'll also assess rectally because it's just a little bit of a better access point to the tailbone. That again, going back to consent, we always go through that with you, what it looks like. And again, reminding people they have the right to remove their consent at any time. But yes, we absolutely were trained in all internal exams, including vaginal and rectal exams.
Sorry. And is this for individuals with bowel incontinence from birth as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we can do a lot of assessing though through the vagina. So sometimes on that first visit, like rectal exams are not the most comfortable thing in the world. I will be the first to say that. I've had a number in my life just based on my training. We practice on each other during our training courses. So I will typically always start by doing a vaginal exam and seeing what information I can get. And then if we're not making the progress that we're looking for, like the second or third session is when I would suggest we do a rectal exam. That's always within that person's control though.
Okay. So before we kind of wrap things up, what's kind of like the most rewarding part of being a physiotherapist that deals with pelvic floor?
Yeah, I have lots of rewarding parts. I would say I just love helping people feel confident going into birth. And I love when I've been treating someone prenatally and then I get to see them postnatally and I get to either like meet their baby or I get to see photos of the baby because not everybody wants to bring their baby in. So I just love that piece. And I just really love giving women and all people back things that assist with quality of life. Right? If someone's saying, you know, oh, I'm embarrassed to go to the gym because I'm peeing all the time, like being able to give that piece back to them is, or help them get back to where they want to be is like super rewarding. Like I just love seeing people smash their goals.
Well, especially that's a very life-changing thing when you didn't have the incontinence previous to giving birth and now you have incontinence. So assisting with women on that journey, it's so powerful and beneficial because it's giving them their confidence back. It's giving them things that they felt like they lost. I know for me, like I still have slight bowel incontinence from my issues that I experienced. And just working with other individuals and figuring those issues out, it's amazing the results that you see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, that's the most rewarding piece for me is just really helping people live their lives to the fullest.
That's great. Well, Lisa, before we end the podcast here today, do you have any other things you wanted to talk about? Anything that we missed?
Yeah, I just want to leave everybody with a little bit of homework if you haven't ever done so. So to all your listeners, your homework is to go home, take a mirror, find a quiet space away from your kids, and just like have a good long look at your vulva and like get to know it. That's the first way you're going to create a connection. And I think more women should have a look at their vulva and really just appreciate it.
Yeah, well, that's amazing. Thank you for sharing all of the information that you did and giving us a little insight.
And now I'm going to go take a mirror and look at myself.
Great. That's perfect. I think we all should do it. So that's fantastic.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
And that concludes our episode with Lisa. That was such a wealth of knowledge. And I do believe every woman will benefit from pelvic floor therapy. And let us know who you want to hear from next. And don't forget to mark the date on your busy mom's calendar for next Friday at 7 p.m. We'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to my mommies. And I really love you so much.
Yo, yo.